It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A number of cities and counties around Wisconsin had advisory referenda on the ballot asking the state legislature to legalize both medical and recreational use of marijuana. Though these ballot initiatives are non-binding, they give us an idea of where public opinion stands on the issue, and they do have the potential to affect public policy. Did you vote for legalization of recreational marijuana in Wisconsin, or did you vote against it? Tell us why. Do you think there will ever be federal legislation to legalize medical marijuana, or do you think it will remain an issue that's up to states and localities to decide? Do you think the federal government should step in, or just leave it up to the states? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll start out by talking with Doug Schneider, a reporter at the Green Bay Press Gazette, who's also part of the USA Today government watchdog team. Doug, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John.
Doug, there were marijuana legalization referenda throughout Wisconsin yesterday. What were they, or not yesterday, Tuesday, what were they and where were they in the state?
They were kind of a patchwork quilt all over the state. Four counties asked about legalizing recreational marijuana. Ten counties in one city asked about legalization for medical marijuana, and then a handful of other municipalities asked multiple questions or a three-part question in one case.
And how did the votes go on these referenda?
Everywhere one was held, it was passed. In most cases, the result was at least 2-1. In a number of cases, 3-1, and sometimes more. There was only one county where two municipalities where it was in the mid 50s in support. But nobody who voted on it said no.
Did it seem that there was stronger support for legalizing medical or recreational marijuana? And was it more in some parts of the state than in others?
There clearly is a greater interest in legalizing medical marijuana, and we saw that just because more counties put that on their ballot. My county, Brown County, considered a second referendum on recreational marijuana, but the county board blocked that, and I also understand that that's happened in some other counties as well. Clearly, there is less opposition in the state to medical marijuana than there is about legalizing recreational marijuana.
Doug Schneider is a reporter at the Green Bay Press Gazette and is part of the USA Today government watchdog team. I'll put it to you, listeners, did you vote for legalization of marijuana, either recreationally or medically in Wisconsin, or did you vote against it? Tell us why, either way, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. The ballot initiatives we saw on Tuesday were non-binding. What does that mean, Doug?
They're advisory in nature. The idea was to take the public's temperature, number one, and to be able to inform legislators in Madison, this is how my constituents feel about this. There was also some indication that it was a way for the progressives to help attract voters who tend to be sympathetic to their cause, their views, but might otherwise stay home on an election day.
Did you get the sense from this that in the future there might be a binding policy referendum, maybe a statewide referendum on legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin?
I don't think that it's going to happen at some point. I think the question is when. I spoke to leaders in the legislature on both sides of the aisle yesterday, and both seem to indicate that it was inevitable. It's just a question of how long it's going to take. One Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz likened it to how people felt in the past about same-sex marriage. At one point, there was a strong sentiment against it, and over time it shifted to now where we have a majority of people saying, you know, hey, this is fine. I don't have any objections to it.
Well, nationally, the opinion seems to be running strong in favor of marijuana legalization in both parties. About 78% of Democrats and 51% of Republicans favor it, according to the latest Gallup poll. So I think that's probably right. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. These ballot initiatives were non-binding, but is it possible that with a Democratic governor that these advisory referenda could affect public policy in some way?
That's the million-dollar question. I think the follow-up is, where does that rank on Governor-elect Emer's list of priorities? You guys played a soundbite earlier where he talked about education and the roads and infrastructure in terms of the roads. You know, so how interested would he be compared to his other? His other priorities. In the meantime, you have leadership in the legislature that is, you know, there are indications that it might not want to work too chummily with an administrator from the other party. So that remains to be seen.
800-642-1234, the number to call to join our conversation. Advisory referenda on ballots in a number of counties and municipalities across Wisconsin on Tuesday, asking voters whether they wanted to approve the legalization of marijuana, either for in some places medical use only, in other places medical and recreational. What's your take on this? Is this something that we need to do at the statewide level? And if you think no, let's leave this alone, let us know how you're feeling about that. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org is the email address, and you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. What have you been hearing in those communities you cover outside of the vote? I mean, what are people saying about legalizing marijuana?
There seems to be pretty overwhelming support from people who say that medical marijuana should be legalized. Pretty much everybody can cite an example of somebody they know undergoing cancer treatment, dealing with chronic pain, who is using marijuana technically illegally and finding relief because of it. The argument over recreational marijuana is more two-sided. There are a number of people who say, look, people use it in everyday life. It's real. It's out there. We use it like alcohol, you know, takes an edge off, kind of helps us relax. But there's also a contingent of people who say, you know, look, it's illegal, so you need to honor that. And there's also a segment from law enforcement that's saying, you know, they've dropped the gateway drug argument, but you'll commonly hear from cops will say, the people I'm arresting or giving a ticket to for marijuana in their mid or late teens, a lot of those guys become the people I'm arresting later on for more serious crimes involving more serious drugs.
Okay, Doug Schneider, thank you for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure, John.
Doug Schneider is a reporter at the Green Bay Press-Gazette and part of the USA Today government watchdog team. Our conversation about legalizing marijuana continues. I'm John Munson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. According to a recent Gallup poll, some 72% of Democrats and 51% of Republicans favored marijuana legalization in some form. A number of states moved into the column of marijuana legalization Tuesday, either medical only or both medical and recreational use, and two-thirds of all states have some form of legalized marijuana use in the United States. But the popular plant remains taboo at the federal level, where it's still classified as an illegal Schedule I drug. Do you think federal drug policy will follow the increasing popularity of marijuana in the states and make it legal? Would you like to see that happen? Was marijuana legalization on the ballot in your city or county this week, and how did you vote? Would you like to see our legislature pass some sort of marijuana legalization legislation? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joining us now is Lee Hanna, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Wright State University. His research focuses on marijuana policy and secondary education policy. Lee, good morning.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Statewide marijuana legalization referenda were on the ballot on Tuesday.
Yes, so there were four statewide referenda. Two would have legalized medical marijuana, and both passed in Utah and in Missouri. And two would have legalized recreational marijuana. Michigan did pass that law, and North Dakota rejected it.
And the so there was a combination, some medical only, some going the full way to recreational use. I understand that in the Utah situation, the state legislature plans to actually fiddle with that a little bit after the fact in order to make the church happy.
Yes, you are correct. So, you know, popular initiatives really vary across the country in terms of not only whether or not a state has access to it, but also to what extent the legislature can still have influence on a policy after it's passed. In my state of Ohio, it was actually fears of a ballot initiative and fears that they wouldn't have control afterwards that really led our legislature to write their own law.
A couple of those states that we mentioned, Missouri and Utah, red states, largely voted Republicans into office on Tuesday. Does that tell us anything about public opinion on the issue of marijuana legalization, at least for medical use?
Sure. I think that definitely the framing around this issue has changed. And the organizations that are interested in getting medical marijuana passed have been, I think, very smart in their messaging. So the later adopting states often draw much attention to veterans with PTSD, attention to children with epilepsy, and the use of the cannabinoid oil to help with their seizures. In parts of the Midwest, at least, much attention on the opioid epidemic and whether or not marijuana would be a less addictive pain treatment plan, to start a patient on rather than going straight to some type of opiate. So I believe for those reasons, it's becoming a bit more palatable for voters in these more red states, as you mentioned.
Well, let's take a phone call. Mike is joining us from Coon Valley. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. I voted in favor. We just had the recreational marijuana. I'd much more approve of the medical marijuana. I'm not really in favor of the recreational legalization, but I think it would also provide a great source of revenue. The marijuana issue is not going to go away, whether it's by being illegal. And I think the prison system is overloaded with non-violent offenders that get arrested for possession of marijuana. And I think if you treat it like alcohol for, like if you're drunk, you're high. I mean, it's just they could figure out how to test for that in drivers. That'd be one way to handle that.
Okay, Mike, thanks for the call. Lee Hanna?
Yeah, Mike makes a couple of really good points, and he is right about this potential revenue. I just recently read that marijuana revenue in North America could be expected to hit about $24 billion in the next couple of years. And just for comparison, that's on par with like the craft beer market. So that's certainly an interesting possibility. And also, as he mentions, there are a number of people locked up right now, and we're using state resources for marijuana offenses, and certainly there's push for that. I do think he also brings up, though, an important challenge. It is much harder to kind of test sobriety with a marijuana user than with an alcohol user. And so that is still something that I think law enforcement often brings up when states are considering these bills.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We're talking with Lee Hanna, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Wright State University, about medical marijuana, legalizing recreational use of marijuana. There were a number of advisory referenda on the ballot in counties and cities across Wisconsin on Tuesday. All of them passed pretty much overwhelmingly. They were advisory, so they weren't binding, but we're talking about it and wondering what you think. 800-642-1234. Here in Wisconsin, as I said, we had these non-binding ballot initiatives in some counties and cities related to legalizing medical marijuana in some form. In places where you've seen these held before, do these kinds of initiatives have any real impact on policy?
Yeah, that is the second part of this. There's often so much effort put into getting the ballot approved, and often, even though the popular will wants to see something happen, legislatures in some states do drag their feet, and even legislatures that pass the law sometimes drag their feet. So, you know, a couple of examples: New Jersey in 2010 passed a medical marijuana bill about the same time as Michigan, and Michigan is also kind of a similarly sized state. But Chris Christie immediately went into office. He has a view that medical marijuana is just not a policy that New Jersey should pursue or prioritize. So by the end of his term, just at the new year here in 2018, only 15,000 people in New Jersey had a registry card, compared to 220,000 members in Michigan. So you definitely see these huge variations in terms of how accessible it is. And we're seeing the same thing in Ohio right now. And I'm in Dayton, Ohio, and we passed this law in the spring of 2016, about the exact same time as Pennsylvania. We have a Republican governor, Republican trifecta. They're not that interested in seeing it implemented, and we still do not have patients registered. We still don't have dispensaries open. Meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, with some more political will, there are 70,000 registered patients, 1,200 physicians registered. We just have 200 physicians registered here. So, yeah, there's definitely significant variation in how it is implemented. Part of that is the way the law is written, but also it's, you know, who's in power to actually see the law carried out.
Let's take another call. This time it'll be Bill in Milwaukee. Bill, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to take advantage of the chat that you have an expert there on this. So many states in the United States have gone with marijuana, and all of the fears that people have about legalization of it, can't we look at our other states as models to see if their fears are justified?
That's a great question. What do we, Lee Hanna, what do we know about how it's gone in other states? Have all the fears of reefer madness come to pass or not?
Yeah, Bill, that is a great question, and it's a point that is often brought up in circles, both in Washington and in other states. You know, the truth is there have been, you know, some false starts in some states. Montana is an example where their initial bill did lead to some pretty significant popular resistance, and then they ironed it out in the legislature. But there's an adage in state politics research that states are the laboratories of democracy, and in many ways, this is one of the most one of the best examples of that, in terms of allowing states, much like laboratories, to experiment with these policies, to refine them and perfect them and tinker with them. And, you know, the truth is, if Wisconsin wanted to, you know, sign a medical marijuana bill tomorrow, they would have a number of interest groups, a number of model bills, you know, put before them that could kind of walk them through this process, where they could model something much like Minnesota or Illinois law, for example.
Well, Colorado certainly has had, I don't, no pun intended, a good time with their recreational marijuana use. It's kind of become a tourist attraction now. Do you think other states are looking at that revenue and saying, maybe we could get in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one probably cuts both ways. I do know that at one point, it didn't go anywhere, but there were a couple of states that tried to sue Colorado, basically over kind of the carryover effects into their state. So I believe Nebraska and Kansas filed suit against Colorado as neighbors who felt like they were seeing an uptick in marijuana enforcement. But yeah, at the same time, the revenue, especially for recreational, and as you mentioned, I think there is a bit of a niche tourism that comes with it as well, and it's a burgeoning market. I think that certainly has appealed to some who maybe see the stigma around marijuana to be a bit dated or unnecessary given all the other problems we have.
Okay, Lee Hanna, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Great, thank you so much.
Lee Hanna is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Wright State University. His research focuses on marijuana policy and secondary education policy. Coming up next, we get the latest on election results and reactions to them from WPR's Laurel White. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Democrat Tony Evers will be Wisconsin's next governor, but Republicans will maintain control of both houses of the state legislature. We're looking at the results from a variety of legislative races around the state, including two rematches between candidates who faced off earlier in special elections. We also look at the prospect of divided government once again in Wisconsin and discuss whether we're potentially heading for gridlock or bipartisanship in the coming months and years. Tell us about the races for state legislature where you live. What were those results and were you happy with them? And with all this talk of a blue wave, do you think Democrats could have done better in these legislative elections? How are you feeling about the prospect of divided government in Wisconsin once again? Do you think we're heading for gridlock or bipartisanship? What issues are you hoping both parties can come together on? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. David Helpap is Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Green Bay. Among other things, his areas of expertise include state and local government. David, welcome to The Morning Show.
Thank you for having me.
Leading up to Tuesday's election, there was a lot of optimism among Democrats that a blue wave could come crashing over the state legislature. Well, that didn't happen, as the GOP held on to their majorities in both the Senate and Assembly, and actually they expanded their majority in the Senate. So, David, right off the bat, would you say this is a bigger win for Republicans or a bigger loss for Democrats?
Well, I think from a legislative perspective, there certainly was optimism that, particularly in the Senate, some of those seats could have been flipped. But at the same time, the districts that they were hoping to flip, the composition made that not a particularly easy task. So while the expectations were there that Democrats could have done a little bit better, realistically, it was going to be an uphill battle, and I think you saw that, especially with the higher turnout. These districts, the composition of them, provided a much bigger base for Republicans to draw on than for Democratic challengers.
Heading into the election, Republicans had an 18-15 majority in the state Senate, so where are we now with that?
Well, that's gone up, and I think probably the most prominent district there was the first, with Andre Jacques and Caleb Frostman, and I think there was a lot of hope there because Frostman was able to win in the special election, but Andre Jacques won actually quite handily in the election that we saw this week.
Yeah, what do you think was behind that?
Well, again, I think that Frostman, he performed really quite well in the special election. Door County in particular helped him carry that race. But in the other counties south of Door County, there was a lot more participation this time around. And with the composition of the district, there was just more people that would naturally vote Republican than Democrat. And those are the people that turned out in greater numbers for the general election.
The GOP also went into Election Day with a 64-35 majority in the Assembly. And what does the count in that chamber look like now?
Well, very similar. The GOP has a pretty substantial lead in that chamber, and there wasn't really any expectations that that was going to flip or even change substantially. So I think you find yourself in a position where we're looking at a very similar situation when it comes to the Wisconsin legislature than we had prior to the election this week.
So there was no real expectation that Democrats could flip the assembly. Can they even win seats here, additional seats, the way the current boundaries are set up?
Well, obviously, it's going to take something similar to what we were or what Democrats were hoping for. You know, this time, a large national trend in favor of Democrats. You would need some very particular issues to stand out that would motivate voters and perhaps get some voters to flip or cross over. But I think for at least the foreseeable year or two, or perhaps even further than that, they're going to be pretty firmly controlled, especially the assembly, by Wisconsin Republicans.
David Helmpap is Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Green Bay. Among other things, his areas of expertise include state and local government. Tell us about the races for state legislature where you live. What were the results, and were you happy with them? And with all this talk of a blue wave, do you think Democrats could have done better in these legislative elections? How are you feeling about the prospect of divided government in Wisconsin once again? Let us know at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Send us an email. The address is ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings on Twitter. So there weren't any real surprises in legislative races around the state, were there?
No, I don't think that's... I mean, there was a close race between Roger Roth and Lee Snodgrass to some degree. In the Appleton area, but beyond that, I think, you know, just about all, I think every incumbent in the Senate won. The Assembly didn't change much, so there really weren't too many surprises, I'd say that.
We talked already about the race between Caleb Frostman and Andre Jacques, the rematch, as it were. Frostman won in the special election. Andre Jacques won rather handily in the general. Elsewhere, Republican State Representative John Plummer held on to his assembly seat that he won in a special election just 5 months ago. Was that the expected result?
I think so. Again, you see a district that, while there was hope there that there could be a flip, the district presents itself in a way that's going to be much more advantageous for a Republican candidate than a Democratic candidate.
Yeah, we all remember Governor Walker didn't want to call the special elections earlier this year, saying they were a waste of taxpayer money, but ultimately the courts forced his hand. But now that everything is said and done, can we say whether or not having these special elections actually made any difference?
Well, you know, if you look at the results, it didn't make a difference. But at the same time, like, these are general elections that really should have been held as they were, and perhaps a little bit earlier. So if the difference perhaps in the general election wasn't great, but at the same time, if this is what the process calls for, this is something that should be seen through.
Let's go to the phones and take a call from Annalisa in Green Bay. Annalisa, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you. I would just like to ask Dr. Helpep what role he thinks gerrymandering might have played in these results in the state legislature. We know that we went to the Supreme Court about this issue, and so it's widely acknowledged that the Republicans gerrymandered this heavily after the last census. So I just like his opinion on that. I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, David Helpap, what do you think about what Annalisa had to say there?
Well, I think we see from the results a few days ago that, you know, running for statewide office is very different than running in a legislative district. So we have a governor and treasurer and secretary of state and attorney general that all went for Democrats. They were very close elections, decided literally between tens of thousands of votes. But at the same time, you see a state legislature where there's a very significant advantage for Republicans, especially in the Senate. The margin is closer, or especially in the Assembly, and the margin is closer in the Senate. So I think you see a very divided, very purple state at the higher state level office, but less so within these legislative districts. So there could be a number of reasons for that, including geographic location of partisan voters. But at the same time, the way you draw these districts also certainly can have a have an impact in who's voting for who.
Of course, now the next step is we have a new governor and we'll have divided governance, a Democratic governor, Republican legislature, and we're wondering how they're going to work together. We have Sean in Burlington who wonders that as well. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. I think the answer to the bipartisanship issue came from Robin Voss yesterday when he said that apparently he doesn't like the way the people voted. So he said that he wants to look at ways to limit the governor's power. I'm not sure how he could do that other than by overriding a governor's veto. And that's my question is, can they override a governor's veto? I just think it's horrible that Voss just doesn't apparently care for the republic.
Okay. I want to give our guest a chance to answer that. What about it? Can the legislature limit Tony Evers' power, and do they have enough votes to override vetoes? That's actually two questions.
Well, with regard to the vetoes, the Republicans will not have enough to override vetoes, and making any change to that particular institution would require a constitutional amendment. So there really is no way that the veto power could be changed prior to Evers taking office. With regard to other changes that could be made, we saw that with Governor Walker, a number of institutional changes were made to agencies to create different priorities within agencies, and then also the amount of power that the Department of Administration had in the state of Wisconsin. So I think you perhaps could make some changes there. But, you know, some of these core functions of the governor, like the veto power, will still be available to the governor. His ability to write a budget and set priorities and be able to speak to the public in a way that legislators simply cannot, those types of key powers will remain.
All right, David Helpap, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and our conversation will continue. Appreciate your being here. David Helpap, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Green Bay. His areas of interest, among other things, include state and local government. To our listeners, how are you feeling about the prospect of divided government in Wisconsin once again? Do you think we're headed for gridlock or bipartisanship? And what issues are you hoping that both parties can come together on? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Our conversation continues in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, if there was a blue wave in Wisconsin, someone forgot to tell the state legislature. Democrats swept all the statewide races, in some cases with razor-thin margins. But the Republicans are still firmly in control of the state legislature. It actually increased their margin in the state Senate. So what happens when Democrat Tony Evers takes over as governor in January? Will there be bipartisanship or gridlock? What do you want to see state government get done next year? Which issues are important to you? And what's your expectation for how divided governance will work? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. David Helpap is with us. He's an associate professor of political science at UW-Green Bay. And among other things, his areas of expertise include state and local government. We have a call from Dennis in Two Rivers. Let's take that call. Dennis, good morning. Welcome to the Morning Show.
Hi. I figure things are going to be about the same because when one party is for something, then the other one is against it. So they're just they're more interested in serving their parties than they are in serving constituents.
All right, Dennis, thank you. The verdict here from Dennis is that we're just going to see more gridlock. David Helpap, what do you think?
Well, I think the possibility certainly is there. And especially as one of your callers indicated earlier, that leadership in the state legislature came out yesterday and said, you know, perhaps that we should think about the different powers that the governor has. If there are too much, maybe we should think about limiting those. And that probably isn't the best good faith effort to indicate cooperation at the outset. Though the governor-elect seems to want to pursue cooperation, he said that at this point. But given sort of the polarization in the state kind of the way things have gone recently, the possibility of gridlock certainly is there.
Well, there was a discussion elsewhere on WPR. In fact, it might have been this program earlier this week about that very thing, the idea that I believe a caller said, hey, could it happen here like it happened in North Carolina, where the legislature basically hamstrung the governor once it changed, the House changed hands from a Republican to Democrat. And the response, I think, from our guest at that time was, well, that would be kind of politically short-sighted, because you have to think that at some point there'll be a Republican governor, and would the Republican Party want to see their governor limited, and that might actually prevent them from taking that action? But I mean, do you see them maybe doing something in spite of that possibility?
Well, you know, I think you see that, or we saw that in Wisconsin just yesterday with regard to the recount, where the governor and the legislature pursued a policy that would make it much more difficult to have a recount in election. And then because this governor's race was so close, I mean, that could have been a possibility, even though the votes fell just outside of that 1% threshold. So you're absolutely right when you say that if you start to make institutional changes, this does, you know, hamstring the person who's in office at the time. But then once the other party retakes the office, do they then make institutional changes again? Or is that person now just as limited as his or her predecessor?
We've got a couple of months before Governor-elect Evers would take office. Prior to the election, there was a talk from GOP lawmakers of calling an extraordinary session in November to consider a Foxconn-style incentive package for Kimberly Clark. Do you think that option is still on the table for state Republicans?
Well, I think it's an issue that was clearly very important in some of the legislative races in Northeast Wisconsin, particularly the Roger Ross Lee Snodgrass race. It's an issue that's very important to voters in this part of the state. But I think the legislative Republicans probably need a little bit of time yet to figure out what their priorities are going to be going forward and what their strategy is going to be going forward. But I think the GOP legislators in Northeast Wisconsin would certainly like to see that issue continue to move forward.
So when does the next legislative session actually start?
Well, you'll start to see action in January, and you'll also start to see sort of a new budget process moving forward as well.
And, of course, the way the budget process works in Wisconsin, the governor, the executive proposes the budget, and then the legislature takes it up and does what they're going to do, and then it kind of goes back and forth. So Tony Evers has got to put together a budget.
Yes, he does.
Once the next legislature is seated, other than the budget, what do you think will be one of the first issues they tackle?
Well, obviously, you're going to have two different sets of priorities. You know, to go back to our discussion of gridlock, I think one of the kind of common ground issues at this point, perhaps one of the few, is transportation. This is where Republicans have actually struggled to come up with a solution to how to fund transportation projects in the state, and this is also something that Tony Evers campaigned on. And there has been actually some support within the GOP in Wisconsin for additional revenue sources for transportation, which Tony Evers has also expressed interest for.
Well, and that's a really interesting point, because the real sticking point in getting anything done the last time was that Governor Walker just said, no, we aren't going to have any more new revenue sources for transportation, and that's just that. And Robin Voss didn't want to borrow any more money, and so they just kind of kept butting heads and nothing got done. Maybe Tony Evers will be easier to work with on that. We could actually see some bipartisanship there. Do you think?
I think that's very possible. And I think if both sides kind of want to get an early policy win, so to speak, this would be the place to start. Because other things like substantially increasing money to education or, dedicating more money to healthcare, those types of issues, I think they would be much more difficult to find cooperation at this point.
Let's take another call. Sarah is with us in Zion, Illinois. Sarah, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, John, thanks so much, and I'm so glad I had a chance to talk to you before, while you're still here, because I just love listening to you.
Oh, thank you. And,
well, you're welcome. I live down here in Illinois, and we just voted out Bruce Rauner, who said that he was like that Scott Walker was his role model. And it was so divided. You know, we had a Democratic state legislature, and then Bruce Rauner as governor, that Illinois didn't pass a budget for almost 2 years, and everything just came to a standstill, and nothing got funded, and social services just got decimated because they just weren't getting funded, and it was just terrible, and that's why Bruce Rauner is not our governor now. And but I wanted to ask a couple questions. First of all, has the Wisconsin state legislature gotten more extreme because than it was a few, like maybe 6 years ago, because people retired, more moderate Republicans retired? And my next question is, does Wisconsin have a provision where the citizenry could put a referendum on the ballot to redraw the district?
Okay, let's get answers to those questions. We're running out of time. Let's take the first one first. Do you think that our legislature has gotten more partisan and more extreme, David Helpap?
Well, I think you see sort of similar to national trends, where some of the more moderate members, people who were historically more willing to work across the aisle, have left the legislature, and they've done that over the last 5 or 6 years. So in that sense, I think those sort of moderating influences have indeed left the legislature.
And could there be a popular initiative to redraw legislative districts? I'm thinking the answer to that is no, but...
So there could be some type of an advisory referendum, but Wisconsin citizens actually don't have the ability to go to referendum or initiative and force the legislature to do anything.
Of course, in a few years, they'll be redrawing the districts again, and this time it'll be a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature, so it could be a little bit different then, and we should probably take a whole show and talk about that. Unfortunately, we're pretty much out of time here. David Helpap, thank you so much for spending this time with us and kind of helping us get some of this stuff in perspective.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
David Helpap is an associate professor of political science at UW-Green Bay. Among other things, his areas of expertise include state and local government. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.